Welcome to EDUCAUSE Now. I'm Colleen Luckett.
And I'm Jerry Bain.
So Jerry, what month is it?
October? Is that why the scary music?
Maybe, but I can think of something scarier than Halloween.
Impossible. There's nothing scarier than Halloween.
Well, let me tell you, I think I've got something for you.
What's that?
It's getting your computer hacked, or worse yet, an institution getting hit on the enterprise level.
Oh, it must be National Cybersecurity Awareness Month.
You got it. And this year's theme is Our Shared Responsibility. But we'll get into that in just a minute. On this episode, we'll also have a look at some great ideas for greening IT from Mark Askren, CIO at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln.
This is a very large problem. It will take time to solve. But by having that long-range plan and then looking for things that we can do in the immediate and near term, it certainly is practical to keep making incremental progress.
And EDUCAUSE President Diana Oblinger will share some of her thoughts on educational attainment.
And an interview with George Strawn, CIO of the National Science Foundation, on streamlining the grant proposal and review process.
Well, now you're talking about a subject that's near and dear to my heart. So obviously, we live and die from the advice we get from the expert reviewers who come in to help evaluate proposals submitted to us.
If you'd like to find out more about the stories and interviews you hear on today's program, including links to the people and organizations we present, visit our show notes at www.educause.edu/now.
Our lives are becoming web-based. As the internet becomes pervasive, we are online from home, school, work, and in between on mobile devices. Even when we are not directly connected, our economy and much of the everyday infrastructure we rely on uses the web. And ultimately, our cyber infrastructure is only as strong as the weakest link. Everyone has a role, and everyone needs to share the responsibility to secure their part of cyberspace and the networks they use. It's National Cybersecurity Awareness Month, and this marks the sixth year for dedicating October to focus on protecting our online presence. The theme this year is Our Shared Responsibility, and appropriately, the National Cybersecurity Alliance is engaged in a student outreach campaign. Amy Larson Kirkpatrick, Campaign and External Relations Director for the NCSA, says that one of this year's goals is to reach out to young people using social media such as Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and other social networks.
The primary focus will be two webisodes that have been created to pique the interest and curiosity of this age group and engage them in thinking about cybersecurity and what they do on their computers and on the networks that they use has an impact not only on them but also on our greater cyber infrastructure. This is truly a grassroots model campaign where we're trying to prime a few individuals to really go out and take charge and use the content materials that we've created through social media and then also encourage them to use traditional media and marketing methods to really get the word out there.
And for the NCSA, the Our Shared Responsibility theme extends even farther into their strategy. They're encouraging university leaders, student government, and even the Greek system to share the resources available at the staysafeonline.org website, helping students learn why cybersecurity is a personal responsibility. The student focus aspect of this campaign is, in some ways, a first for NCSA.
In the past, we have not done a concerted campaign for higher ed. We've always partnered with EDUCAUSE, which has been great. And this is the first time that we've developed the campaign. And of course, EDUCAUSE is one of our partners in this campaign. But I think that this is a difficult age group to reach. While this age group understands how to use the technology and is generally far more savvy than many of us, they're not necessarily security and safety savvy. And so we're really trying to reach them on their ground and use the means of communication that they use and also create something that's of interest to them instead of the tried and true cybersecurity messages that have been out there.
The webisodes are videos that will be released on YouTube and fed into the various social networking sites to provide maximum impact for students and young people.
In addition to webisodes, we're also developing some PSAs that can be placed in like student newspapers or some radio PSAs that can be used in the university broadcast system. So it's open for anyone. We encourage anyone to take and use it, add to it. That's, you know, part of what social media is all about. We're hoping that this is really the starting point of a campaign and that others are inspired to take it up and add their own materials to it or add content, see what they can do to engage students in this conversation about cybersecurity.
Another recently launched initiative is the Cybersecurity Awareness Volunteer Education Project, or CSAVE. Inspired by their diverse partners in government, industry, and other nonprofit organizations, the NCSA developed a suite of free materials to encourage and support security and IT professionals to put their knowledge and expertise to work in local K-12 schools.
This program was really born out of a study that we released last year that showed that in K-12 classrooms, there's very little being taught about even online safety, much less cybersecurity. And that really a huge part of the reason why is because teachers don't have the resources, they're not receiving the professional development, and they're really unsure of what needs to be taught and a little uncomfortable with the subject matter.
In developing the program, NCSA worked with an instructional designer to develop a downloadable set of tools that anyone with a little cyber savvy can put into the classroom. They encourage individuals, as well as organizations, to become CSAFE volunteers as part of a commitment to bring cybersecurity education and awareness to their local schools during National Cybersecurity Awareness Month in October. To find out more about National Cybersecurity Awareness Month and for downloadable materials, including posters, web banners, and CSAVE tools, visit the National Cybersecurity Alliance website at www.staysafeonline.org.
We are EDUCAUSE.
Unable to attend the EDUCAUSE annual conference in person this year?
Now you can learn and network with colleagues without ever having to leave your campus.
It's EDUCAUSE 2009 online.
One package price will provide you with EDUCAUSE 2009 general, featured, and point counterpoint sessions,
as well as a selection of track sessions streamed,
a selection of online-only EDUCAUSE 2009 lightning rounds,
interactive discussion sessions with experts on current topics,
EDUCAUSE Center Online, a web-based community where you can chat and network with others.
Session recordings from the face-to-face events, a $300 value mailed to you after the conference.
The online conference will be held Wednesday, November 4th through Friday, November 6th. Participate individually or as a team.
Team participation can help your institution advance a current or upcoming project or encourage cross-disciplinary collaboration.
To register for EDUCAUSE 2009 online, visit www.educause.edu/e2009.
Uncommon thinking
for the common good.
While IT is not the major consumer of energy and greenhouse gases on campus, it certainly is one of the fastest growing areas. This is why it's so important, even in a climate of revenue shortfalls, to reduce the growth in energy consumption in the IT sector. But what's the tension between institutional behavior and industry behavior in finding a workable solution with green IT? Mark Askren, CIO at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, says that he has seen vendors have a major impact.
I've been quite impressed with what vendors are doing, particularly in the hardware area for servers, where Sun Computers and some of the other vendors have been really out in front of this and have helped us in the data center. And the data center is the largest portion, typically, of where IT energy consumption is happening. So from that standpoint, the vendors are certainly doing their share and more in terms of what's going on with ENERGY STAR compliant monitors, laptops, PCs, even now servers are going to be rated, and some of the larger systems in the data center. So a lot of good things happening with vendors.
He also sees solutions at the institutional level, with some leading the way and some playing catch up with enterprise level projects like server virtualization.
And that's another area where we're seeing some very positive alignment, where we're able to reduce the, or increase at least, the productivity as far as our sysadmin time spent managing systems with virtualization. We get some significant gains there. And it also, by the way, is very green in terms of less equipment in the data center, which generates less heat, which requires less cooling. So it's quite remarkable to me, as I've learned more about this the last several years, that we're not looking at a lot of trade-offs like we are often in IT. So for example, with IT security, you're looking at securing the data versus easy access to it. You want to do both things, but they typically butt heads with one another. Whereas with a lot of the green initiatives, they're best practices to begin with. And it's been very practical in terms of a matter of identifying those, even in these difficult economic times.
As the ratio of power consumption to power output is considered, several solutions are being embraced, such as air economizers, both for new data centers and for retrofitting. Another idea gaining momentum is keeping data centers less cool than was traditionally considered. And since they run 24/7, even a few degrees can make a big difference in energy consumption and cost. And here's the thing. Implementing real solutions takes buy-in from several stakeholders. Even with student and faculty on the same page, sometimes it's important to address the administration where it counts, money.
Many campuses have struggled with utility deficits. So we know cost of energy, even with oil fluctuating so much, that energy costs are projected to rise, and that's been an issue for all of us. So campus sustainability efforts and green IT can make a significant difference in terms of our true utility deficits and our usage. So it can save real money in addition to doing the right thing for the broader perspective. So I think that helps in terms of administration. And we also have faculty doing research in these areas. So it really does bring, all three groups have a significant role to play.
So it all sounds great. We're going to save money, we're going to save the planet, and we're going to make things more efficient. So what's the roadblock?
It's a very good question. Sometimes it takes funds, it takes seed money to start on some of these projects. So with the University of California, for example, there's a strategic energy partnership where we're working together to identify these projects and find ways to fund them in more creative ways than in the past. The nice thing about these green IT and sustainability projects is they often fit into return on investment analysis. That isn't always true with ERPs and some other IT initiatives in higher ed. It's sometimes hard to quantify the value. In this case, with a lot of these initiatives, you can see the true dollar savings. So there's an advantage. But it takes change. Part of it is to have a comprehensive plan. And so I think the campuses that are doing very well are ones that have a campus sustainability effort. And quite often people identified to explicitly run those project teams that do comprise the faculty, staff, and students, and that they are looking at long-range planning. This is a very large problem. It will take time to solve. But by having that long-range plan and then looking for things that we can do in the immediate and near term, working together, it certainly is practical to keep making incremental progress and to publicize that and to measure it. I think we will see, in effect, everyone doing it for both financial and for the larger issues. Some are just further along than others.
Mark Askren is CIO at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. For links to some of his articles, with more specific thoughts on green IT, visit our show notes at educause.edu/now.
This is Diana Oblinger, and I'd like to share some thoughts about educational attainment. In the last several months in the United States, there's been an increasing conversation about the importance of educational attainment, or completing college, or a credential. Of course, the reason educational attainment is important is because it's required to fuel a vibrant economy, as well as the personal and societal benefits that come from education. But there are a few things that are important to note. One is that educational attainment is not just about 18-year-olds going to college. It's about learners of any age completing their education. And it's not just about the U.S. Countries around the world have similar goals. And it's not just about a once-in-a-lifetime experience. It's the ongoing skill development that we will all need throughout our careers. So whether we're talking about preparation for college, college-going rate, graduation rate, lifelong skills development, IT has a great deal to contribute. There are at least three ways that IT professionals can help. One is keeping costs controlled so higher education remains as affordable as possible. Many of our current IT activities have that goal in mind, whether it's cloud computing, virtualization, open educational resources, e-textbooks, or online learning. A second way IT professionals contribute is by developing engaging learning environments, providing people with the opportunity to move beyond lecture and text to simulation, role-playing, problem-solving, providing tutoring and support on demand, and networking with peers and faculty worldwide. And of course, a third way we contribute is by supporting college and university environments, the enterprise systems that support the institution, whether it's ERP systems, course management systems, the policies that promote security, privacy, as well as identity and access management, and of course, broadband or the internet access that everything is built on. So whenever the conversation is about educational attainment, IT professionals have a great deal to contribute.
The search for funding can be both time-consuming and frustrating. Online databases are becoming increasingly important in helping scholars to quickly identify potential sponsors for their research. Competition for National Science Foundation grant awards is especially intense, as increasing numbers of proposals have clashed with the agency's budget constraints. Successful proposals are written by investigators who combine sound principles of grant writing with an understanding of NSF's overall merit review process. I recently spoke with George Strawn, CIO at the National Science Foundation, about efforts they've made to streamline the grant proposal process.
I understand that the NSF has had a key role in enhancing the research.gov website. Can you describe the role of that website in the NSF grant-making process and maybe elaborate on some of the functionalities it provides?
Sure. I'll mention several websites or several electronic procedures to make sure that we're all talking about the same thing. Research.gov is actually an NSF website that we are creating, so we're not only enhancing it, we created it and will continue to enhance it over the coming years. Grants.gov was, in some sense, patterned after a process that NSF began in the middle 90s called Fastlane, which was part of the NSF website, so it doesn't have a .gov after it, but Fastlane, beginning in the middle 90s, enabled persons applying for NSF grants to submit their proposals electronically. By the year 2000, we were receiving 98% of our proposals electronically. Since that time, we've added a second capability called e-jacket, or electronic jacket, which is the electronic equivalent of the paper jacket that held all of the papers associated with proposals and either their declinations or their awards and follow-up reports and what have you. And now, having given you that context, let me say that research.gov is, in effect, NSF's attempt to create a second generation of Fastlane and e-jacket services. Mm-hmm. So we're going around again with 10, 15 year later technology and capabilities, plus the knowledge of what we did before. So what will it provide? Initially, it was thought that research.gov would not provide find and apply services like grants.gov, but now it has been suggested to us that perhaps we should have second generation find and apply to give an option for persons applying to federal agencies for competitive research grants. So that's something that we may be seeking to add over the next year to research.gov. Currently, there are, I would call, more ancillary capabilities available, such as can you find the status of your research proposal to any agency that utilizes the research.gov services. It's a brand new thing, and it's just really coming into service now, and we're attempting to utilize modern concepts like service-oriented architecture, which will mean that we can loosely couple the services and providing a market basket of tools and capabilities for agencies and for universities to utilize, and I expect it to grow greatly over the next 5 years.
Well, the peer review process is also an integral part of your agency's selection process for proposals and to receive funding. Can you describe what types of systems you have set up at NSF to assist program officers in finding appropriate reviewers for these proposals?
Well, now you're talking about a subject that's near and dear to my heart. So obviously, we live and die from the advice we get from the expert reviewers who come in to help evaluate proposals submitted to us. This is a core element of our activities. So what are we doing? We are in the process of rolling out, probably over the next few months, a two-pronged process of automated help for the program officers. Number one, we're making available a database of all previously submitted and funded proposals to NSF, which can be searched by the program officers. And so our goal is ultimately to have a virtual database of all published scientific literature that can be searched in a manner similar to this actual database of NSF proposals, returning the articles and hence the authors of the articles that have written on subjects which are similar to the proposal that we may have received. Finally, say that as time goes along, we intend to have much more sophisticated approaches than simply looking for keywords using such established techniques as term vectors, which we don't need to go into here, and other metadata-related annotations to proposals, and I suspect ultimately to scientific articles as well, that will make a precision searching for similar topic matters much more concise and therefore much more useful to the program officers.
George Strawn, CIO for the National Science Foundation.
Thanks for joining us. If you'd like to find out more about the stories and interviews you heard, check out our show notes.
And a reminder that EDUCAUSE 2009 takes place in Denver, Colorado, November 3rd through the 6th. We hope to see you there. And for more information on the conference, including a way to participate online, visit www.educause.edu/E2009. I'm Jerry Bain for EDUCAUSE Now.
And I'm Colleen Luckett. Thanks for listening.